You know, there's a question I think about sometimes when I'm cruising along at flight level 350, looking up at that deep blue sky above me. How high can you actually go? I'm Tower, and this is AT is on Radio Hangar. Today we're heading way, way above the flight levels. We're talking about military aircraft that operate at service ceilings so extreme, they're practically spacecraft. And some of them, we don't even know exactly how high they go because that information is classified. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. All right, so Simple Flying put together a fascinating look at the six military aircraft with the highest service ceilings currently in active service. And I want to walk through these with you, because even if you're never going to fly any of them, understanding what happens at the edge of the atmosphere tells you a lot about aerodynamics, engine design, and the physics we all deal with at much lower altitudes. Let's start with some context. When we talk about service ceiling, we mean the maximum altitude at which an aircraft can sustain a rate of climb of 100 feet per minute. Above that, you're running out of air. Your wings can't bite. Your engines can't breathe. It's a hard physical limit, and pushing it higher has been one of the great engineering challenges in aviation for decades. Now, for most of us flying general aviation, service ceiling is something we glance at in the POH and never think about again. Your Cessna 172 tops out around 14,000 feet, a Cirrus SR-22, maybe 17,500, even a pressurized TBM-960 is looking at 31,000. These numbers matter for mountain flying, for weather avoidance, for planning. But the aircraft we're talking about today, they operate in a completely different world. Let's work our way up. Starting near the bottom of this list, you've got the Eurofighter Typhoon. This is a European multi-role fighter that serves with several NATO air forces. Its published service ceiling is around 65,000 feet. Now, 65,000 is already extraordinary. That's nearly 20 miles above the surface. At that altitude, the sky above you is more black than blue. You can see the curvature of the Earth. The outside air temperature is around negative 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and the atmospheric pressure is less than 1/16th of what it is at sea level. The Typhoon gets there using two Eurojet EJ200 turbofan engines, each producing around 20,000 pounds of thrust with afterburner. It's a Delta Canard design, which gives it exceptional high-altitude maneuvering characteristics. The big wings relative to weight help it maintain controlled flight where the air is incredibly thin. Next up is the Russian MiG-31, the Foxhound. This interceptor was designed during the Cold War specifically to patrol vast stretches of Soviet airspace at extreme altitude and speed. Its service ceiling is published at around 67,500 feet. The MiG-31 is a massive aircraft. Two crew, two enormous Soloviev D-30F6 turbofan engines. It can sustain Mach 2.83. That's nearly three times the speed of sound. Here's what you need to know about why that matters. At those altitudes, you need speed to stay flying. The air is so thin that your stall speed goes through the roof. There's a phenomenon called the coffin corner that high-altitude pilots know well. The margin between your stall speed and your maximum Mach number gets narrower and narrower as you climb. At some point, the speed at which you stall and the speed at which you hit compressibility limits are almost the same number. You've got a razor-thin band of flyable airspeed. It takes exceptional aircraft and exceptional pilots to operate there. Moving higher, the F-22 Raptor. America's fifth-generation air superiority fighter has a classified service ceiling, but publicly available figures suggest it operates above 65,000 feet, with some estimates considerably higher. The Raptor's twin Pratt & Whitney F-119 engines are unique because they can supercruise. That means sustained supersonic flight without afterburner. That capability isn't just about speed, it's about efficiency at extreme altitude. When you're burning fuel that fast, the ability to go supersonic without lighting the afterburners means dramatically better range and endurance up high. The F-22 also features thrust vectoring, which is critical at high altitude. When your control surfaces are biting into almost nothing because the air is so thin, being able to direct the engine exhaust gives you control authority that aerodynamic surfaces alone can't provide. It's a brilliant piece of engineering. Now we get into the truly rarefied air. The Lockheed U-2, known as the Dragon Lady. This aircraft has been flying since the 1950s, and it's still in active service with the United States Air Force. Its service ceiling is above 70,000 feet. Some sources say 73,000 or higher. The U-2 is a remarkable aircraft for a lot of reasons. It's essentially a jet-powered glider. Those enormous wings, spanning 103 feet, are designed to generate lift in air that has almost no density. The aircraft is so optimized for high altitude that it's notoriously difficult to land. The wings generate so much lift in the thick air near the surface that the airplane just doesn't want to stop flying. They actually use chase cars on the runway, often driven by other U-2 pilots, calling out altitude and drift during landing because the pilot's visibility from the cockpit is extremely limited. The pilots wear full pressure suits, essentially spacesuits, because at 70,000 feet, a loss of cabin pressure would be immediately fatal. Your blood would begin to boil at body temperature. That's not a figure of speech. The atmospheric pressure is so low that the boiling point of water drops below 98.6 degrees. They call it Armstrong's line, and it sits at around 63,000 feet. Every U-2 pilot goes through the same physiological training that astronauts do. Think about that. These are Air Force pilots, flying an airplane but preparing for flight the same way NASA prepares people for space. And then there's the SR-71 Blackbird's spiritual successor. Now, the Blackbird itself was retired in 1999, but its legacy lives on in classified programs. The headline doesn't tell the whole story here, because when we talk about the highest service ceilings in active service today, we inevitably bump into programs that officially don't exist. What we do know is that the SR-71 held the official altitude record for sustained horizontal flight by an air-breathing aircraft at 85,069 feet. And there are persistent, credible reports of reconnaissance platforms currently in service that operate at or above that altitude. The RQ-170 Sentinel, sometimes called the Beast of Kandahar, is one known example of a classified aircraft that eventually became public. There are almost certainly others flying today that we won't know about for years or decades. This brings up an interesting point about service ceilings and classification. For most military aircraft, the published ceiling is the declassified number. The actual operational ceiling is often higher, sometimes significantly. When a nation's strategic advantage depends on being able to fly where the other side can't reach you, you don't publish your true capability. So when you see a number like 65,000 or 70,000 feet, understand that might be the floor of what the aircraft can actually do, not the ceiling. There's also the Global Hawk to mention. The RQ-4 Global Hawk is an unmanned surveillance aircraft with a published ceiling of 60,000 feet, though it typically operates around that altitude for extended periods. What makes the Global Hawk remarkable isn't its peak altitude, but its endurance. It can stay above 55,000 feet for over 30 hours. That's a day and a quarter circling at the edge of the stratosphere, watching. For those of us who fly general aviation, there are some practical takeaways from all of this beyond just the cool factor. Understanding service ceiling tells you about the fundamental relationship between air density, wing design, and propulsion. The same physics that limits your skylane to 14,000 feet are the same physics that the U-2's designers had to overcome to reach 70,000. It's all about generating enough lift in thin air while maintaining enough thrust to stay above stall speed. And if you've ever wondered why turbocharged and turbonormalized engines matter for GA aircraft, this is the same problem on a smaller scale. A turbo lets your engine breathe at altitude, maintaining sea-level power output where a normally aspirated engine would be gasping. The military versions of this same idea involve exotic engine cycles, pressure suits, and airframes that flex and expand with temperature changes of hundreds of degrees. One more thought. The coffin corner concept I mentioned earlier, it's not just a military problem. Any pilot flying a pressurized aircraft at the flight level should understand it. The higher you go in your meridian or your citation, the narrower that margin between stall and max Mach becomes. It's why high-altitude upsets are so dangerous, and it's why understanding the aerodynamics of thin air matters even if you'll never see 70,000 feet. This story came from Simple Flying, and it's worth a deeper read if the engineering side of extreme altitude flight interests you. You can find more coverage and all our segments at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower. Fly the altitudes you've got, and respect the ones you don't. See you next time on ATs.